Most businesses, and when I say most, 99.9% businesses would never do this. Tell us about the move last summer and why you did it.
We've been in New Jersey for 54 years of that business's operation. From 2019 to 2022, the company's pretty much doubled in its output, doubled in its earnings and revenue and so forth. We had no more space. And it led us to relocating our business from New Jersey down to North Carolina in the Charlotte area. To move a manufacturing facility is not a simple task.
How the hell did you convince the majority of your team to move everything they've known from Jersey their whole lives to North Carolina?
I poured my heart into it, man. I think they decided to come because they believe in me. They believe in what I talk about. They believe in my heart. They believe in the fact that I got their back every single day. I got their back in everything they're doing, whether it's work, whether it's personal issues they're dealing with. And I have a famous phrase that I love, those who care more win more. Any task you do, if you put that extra level of care into that, it's going to be that much better, whether it's the feeling you get from accomplishing it or from it's the level of effort and care that you put into somebody else. They will see it and they will feel it. And not only will they win, but because they win, you win.
Welcome back to Spartan Leadership. I'm your host, Josh Kosnick. Hey, and this is your reminder, long-term listeners, you're doing a great job of sharing the episodes. Want to continue to thank you for that. We're bringing in guests of high impact and making sure that you're learning. And today will be no different. If you're new, you get some impact out of today, man, share it. And welcome to the Spartan Leadership Podcast, where we bring in high impact leaders, have leader-to-leader conversations, and bring as much inspiration and impact to this world that we can. And today I am excited. With us on the line this morning is a Spartan with a degree in GSD, my good friend, president and CEO of Elnick Systems by profession and motivator and woodworker by passion. Please join me in welcoming Stefan Yearns to the show. What's up, brother?
What's going on, dude? Good to be back on the show. Super stoked. Good to see you. And before we go any further, man, I just want to let you know how absolutely incredibly proud I am of you and Alicia. The whole podcast in general, but you guys have really been swinging for the fences the last few months, and they've been amazing, bro. So I'm really proud of you. And Alicia, too. I appreciate that. Gotta get you credit.
Yeah, no, Alicia's the brains behind the scene. I just run my mouth. So, yeah. And try and ask as many powerful questions as possible. But I appreciate that. If you guys aren't watching on YouTube and you're listening, Stefan's coming to us with a beautiful, beautiful background. That is real. That is not just a virtual background. That's his American flag in his office that he's got. But I saw him. He was drinking his first form Screaming Freedom energy drink to get us rocking and rolling this morning as well. All Americaned out, and we'll get into some of that as well today. But as we get into what I want to talk about, I did in your intro, which university did you complete your GSD at?
Ah, that's a great question, dude. I'm just going to call it Life University. I'm going to call it just growing up and doing shit and getting shit done and realizing that the only way forward is to put one foot in front of the other, solving problems, and working with the team and getting shit done. It's something funny that I kind of coined that, I don't know, maybe 5-6 years ago with a cousin of mine. We were just talking about stuff and she was saying how she just like, she's an executive assistant for a couple different companies she's worked over the years. And she's like, you know what? Every time I get the job and every time I'm working for these people, they're so excited because I'm sitting here just getting everything done. I get done what they need to get done. So I just said, yeah. You got your GSD. And she goes, what's that all about? So I said, it's your get shit done degree. You know, so I'm trying to figure out a way to make this like a little moniker, three letter abbreviation after the name, that most people have for PhDs and stuff. But GSD is what it's all about, my friend.
Yeah, I know. And it's interesting you say that because I always joke. I think it's funny when people put MBA behind their name because it's not a designation. Mm-hmm. You went to school to get your MBA. And I guess because you paid six figures for it, you may think that that's cool to have on your business card. But at the end of the day, an MBA actually doesn't teach you anything about how to run a business.
Truth.
It's very little to do with even managing people for that matter. So it's interesting that that's a degree that people find prestige in, which I would rather have the getting shit done degree. Yep. Because you actually are moving the needle inside of a business and learning along the way. And if leadership happens to be one of the things you learn and that you step into, awesome. Otherwise, we need people inside of organizations at all levels that are getting shit done.
Yeah. You know, for me, it's, I'm a lead from the front kind of guy. I don't like to sit in the back and crack the whip. I'm a guy that's out there showing the guys how to do it because, it's, you know, as we'll get into a little bit later, one of the fun things about what I love to do here within the company is go outside and turn some wrenches with the guys because I've done every job this company has. So I'm the example for getting shit done, and I've groomed guys within the organization that I can rely on, that if I leave the business for a day, a week, or whatever the travel that's need to be done, I can give these guys their list. Hey, go GSD this for me, right? They do it every single time. I don't have to check in. And they've earned that degree in my school, let's just say, the school of life. And it makes me super proud to look at some of these guys and say that, you know, that they're at that level and they're that reliable as humans to get things done. So cool.
Oh, it's really good. My dad always said, if you want something done, give it to a busy person. Mm-hmm. And there's so much truth to it because a busy person, people are like, wait, well, why would you give it to someone that has a lot of stuff on their plate? That seems counterintuitive. And yes, at first that does seem counterintuitive. However, what you find out is that busy people figure out how to get things done and they prioritize their day. They time block their day. They just figure out how to get shit done. Whereas a person that has a lot of space or a lot of wiggle room in their calendar will typically delay until the last minute to actually get that thing done. And therefore, it's not as productive. So it's just interesting when you realize that in business, is something I found out through my father, and then I saw it with my own eyes, and I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. So speaking of my father and also yours, we're both second-generation business owners, successors. Mm-hmm. So I always ask this because this was a big deal. And you're in a private sector with a closely held firm and business. I was representing a company through a Fortune 100 company. So I had, you know, kind of overlords over our decision-making process. That was the company's decision, not my father's decision. Not that he wouldn't have transitioned the business to me, but there was a lot of nepotism stuff that was coming up. And so I was wondering on getting into you, and we might have talked about this a little bit on our previous podcast, but did you ever get the shit on nepotism or claims of nepotism from other leaders that were already in the business?
Yeah, man, I think it happens to just about everybody that comes into the business. And I'd say it's a little bit of a degree of difference depending on when you come in. And I was thinking about that this morning when I was thinking about what, you know, some of the things I'd like to share with you today and your audience today is there's two different ways people come into companies. Right, as second generation or third generation kind of ownership is there's those that come in either due to an illness in the elder, you know, person, or they've just gone through a life change and now they're going into a family business later in life, right? Those people, I feel like they have, from an age perspective, they gain respect because they're in their late 30s through 50s or something along those lines. So they just have life experience that sometimes people will grant them the grace of giving them some respect to it. The other group is the people that come up through the business as kids, right? They work in and out of their businesses when they're little, or they come in somewhere in their 20s where they're generally younger than the masses of people that are within the organization. And for me, I came in since I was 14 years old. So that was without a doubt, there were moments and times where I would get a little flack, right? Being the owner's son, so to speak. Not as much when I was in my first stint, 14 to like 19, but when I came back when I was 27, I got way more of it because at that point I was away, I was coming back into the business, and it was just a different viewpoint from those people within the business. And I had to, there were some people I had a good relationship with, but a lot of these people I had to almost regain their trust. And the way that I did it and the reason why I'm at the place I am today from a leadership of this business and the trust and relationship I have with my team is I just worked with them. I didn't bark orders. I didn't go up to somebody and say, hey, this is what I need you to do. Go do it. I said, hey, this is what I need you to do. This is how I used to do it. These are where I found my resources. And this is the way that you can solve these problems. And if you need help, you can go to this guy, come to me. And like I said, during, you know, a talk we had about this once before is, if you've had the opportunity to do the tasks within a business, that's why I think it's better to grow up within a business and then eventually take it over. You have this ability to be a really good guide for people because you know the process steps, you know the resources, you know the locations. Where if you just come into a business as a later person in life, you can probably figure it out. Hopefully you've earned your GSD along the way. But it definitely is viewed upon a little differently. I feel like people that come in as second generation business owners in their late 30s and 40s, they get viewed upon as like, oh, they're here for a paycheck. Oh, they're here because they want the lifestyle that their parents had. And we don't know how they're going to behave and act. Where for me is, yeah, I love the lifestyle that my folks had and built for themselves and the business and the legacy that my dad's grown for himself. But in no way, fashion, or form did I ever walk in and be like, I want to have this tomorrow. I knew I had to earn it. I knew every single day I had to work my ass off to show the team that I know what I'm doing, to show myself that I know what I'm doing, and continue to build myself up through that ladder in the business so that I can help people the right way. I'm a big believer in doing things the right way and doing it in a way where the team knows that I'm on their team and I'm on their side, and I'm not there just to bark orders at people and make them into robots. I like people. I like people on my team. I like growing my team, and I like helping them train and learn more so they advance their careers too.
And one of the things I know you have shared with me in the past, but for the audience's sake, you were in a lot of different roles in the business along the way. Was that purposeful by your father, or was that something you chose to do, or was it out of necessity for the business's growth as you were kind of the utility player and it just kind of happened to work out that you got shit done through all those different areas?
That's a great question. I would like to reflect back and say it's probably a combination of all three. I know from my dad's perspective, shortly after I came back to the business, and you know, I worked a few jobs before I had this opportunity, but he always told me, if you're really going to get involved in this business and the technology, which is relatively new, you got to learn it and you're going to have to get into it fast. So his vision was for me to go work with one of our customers and learn all the things that happened before the equipment we have, because as he grew up in the technology, he was able to communicate with his customers about things other than the furnaces that we make. For me, as I went through, it kind of came up more as it was a necessity. We had people that left, you know, positions as managers, people that left positions as running my shop floor, challenges in different areas of the business. I was always the kind of guy that, you know, in connection with some of your background, I left manufacturing for a while, went into finance. And while I was working in finance, I really wanted to go down this path of being a manager. But the way that they ran their management program really shifted and changed. I started to lose interest in the way it was structured. So that's what brought me back to the family business. But as I worked my way through Elnick, every opportunity I had to take on a new role was because a manager left or a leader left. And the people we had within the team either weren't set and ready to do that, or nobody volunteered to step up and do that role. So for me, I love people. I love to lead people. I love to be a resource for people to advance their task or their life or their career. I didn't know everything I was doing, but I knew that I knew people and I knew that I could figure it out and I knew that I could get shit done. Just put me in the seat and give me a chance. So that was through necessity that I moved myself through all these different areas of the business. And I learned so many different things together with the team, you know, and that was the other thing too, is I knew, and this is one of the other things for most people when they get involved in anything in life. If you know you're not the sharpest person about the topic, go find people to help you make decisions towards a solution. For me, I always did that in the company where I didn't know the answer to the problem because it was a deep, you know, technical issue of welding or machining, I would go grab 3 to 5 people and we'd have a conversation around it and we would make a decision as a group. So that's really what led me to have a much more team culture atmosphere, because I would always incorporate the people in the decision, mainly because I knew I didn't know the decision.
Yep.
Right. Or I could make it, but I really wanted the input from everybody else because it just builds a better community across your organization.
Yeah. If they're part of the plan, they don't fight the plan.
Yeah.
Exactly. Nearly as much, or should say nearly as much. All right, good. Let's debunk this for those in the back. You posted a true GSD recipient thought last week, and I want to continue on this topic a little bit. You posted, if you are not a starter and you think you should be, give them no choice in the decision. Play so well, it's undeniable.
Absolutely. And so, I love that quote.
And that means so much to me because I have some thoughts on this as well from my past experience. But for you, as you posted that, what was on your heart that morning?
It's funny, man. So to step back, I do quotes every single day within the company. I have a little quote board on my wall and I usually write a new quote down on the wall. And it's either one that I've just seen that was amazing, and it turns out throughout the day, somebody's coming into my office or coming through the facility. I'm like, boom, that quote, this is perfect for you and your world. that quote that I posted actually was because we had a younger guy in our team who moved down to North Carolina with us. We just recently moved locations from New Jersey to North Carolina, and we had a little bit more than half our team, and then another quarter of the team stay on board remote. So he came down with us, and you know, he went through this transition down here where he was like a night and day, a much better teammate and employee and leader of himself. But after the first job, he, you know, did pretty well in the first job. And then in the second job, didn't do so hot. And he sat there, he's like, oh, I did such a great job. How come I'm not being recognized? And it sparked in my head. And I remember this quote, because I actually posted that quote a couple of years ago. I was like, just because you do a job once really, really well, doesn't make you the guy, doesn't make you the undeniable, you know, number one starter for what it is. If you look at any sports team and you look at people that are starters, they're clutch, they're repetitive, they're consistent. They're the people that are constantly going out and getting the job done for you. So that was just a quote that I noticed, and it came up back as a Facebook memory, and I reposted it out because that person kind of sparked that from my mind. And I just wanted to reshare that with the team and with the world.
Yeah, that's so good. So here's, I don't think I've shared this story in full with my audience, and I think it's really appropriate for here, is as I was coming up the ranks and I was getting all the, you know, so I had a red target on my back when I first entered the firm, you know, my last name being the same as the boss, and I had to prove my way all the way along the way and hit certain metrics that I've, and you know, what's funny looking back is I think a lot of those were in my head more than anyone else was putting on me. Because I felt that pressure to live up to the last name or to be worthy to be there, not just that I was there to collect a paycheck, like you had mentioned, for that other, you know, sector of people that come in a little later. And so the corporate entity was assessing me as potentially the next leader of the firm. And of course, they got people throughout the country that they're always assessing as well. And they wanted me to do all these steps. And one of them was to open up an office on the east side of Madison to separate myself and prove this separation from my father. Well, the problem with that is it was going to cost between my father and I about $500,000. Okay. And it was going to take all the leaders, the current young leaders, out of the network office and put them over in my office, because all the young leaders were under me. They were who I was developing. And so it would have left the main office kind of high and dry. So not only was it going to cost my father and I a good chunk of money, but also it would have kind of killed the culture in the process, just to prove that I was the guy and not, it wasn't nepotism. It was to like to separate the resumes almost, so that they could prove to their own corporate entity essentially, or have it on paper that if anyone asked about nepotism, that they had a clearer path. So bottom line is, what I did was just become undeniable. I became the number one district in the company, in the country, beating Atlanta, beating Dallas, beating LA, beating Chicago, all these big cities, just so they could, and I was like, now what? Like, now you have your undeniable proof. And therefore they named me the person. But it's interesting that you put that quote out there, because it's so true. So many people want to just wear the crown without carrying the crown. And you got to carry the crown before you wear the crown, and you got to be willing to do it and be humble enough to do it and learn and be in that growth mode. And there's so many different nuances that come with being the son or daughter of the boss, because other people are looking at you constantly judging you, you know, are they getting this special privilege because of this or that, because they're family. Oftentimes that is a way worse relationship, rockier relationship than most would realize, because there are family emotions involved, along with being a boss and employee relationship. And the other employees don't have any of that to worry about. So oftentimes it can be a lot harder. And we're going to get into that in a little bit. I got a couple questions for you on that, but let's dig a little deeper.
Or you have something real quick? Yeah, let me add one thing to what you said, because I like this. This brings something into my head here. So what you had said was, you know, there was a target on your back, right? And there was a target on my back within the organization too, although there was nobody really moving itself through the organization to kind of take it over. But what you had said, which was the more powerful part, is the amount of pressure you put on yourself.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that is what actually leads someone to become the real true leader that they can become, because they're constantly moving themselves. They're constantly trying to take that next step, move to that next rung of the ladder and do these things, because they need to not just prove it to the organization, they need to prove it to themselves. Yep. And it's the little difference, I think, between, you know, a different style leader that the world needs more of versus what people just take as like manager roles, so to speak, right? Or somewhat of a leadership role. But those that really excel, the people that really change the world, are the ones that are constantly putting that pressure gas pedal down for themselves, because they know that they have to keep going. They have to keep growing, because if they don't, it's going to stop and somebody else is going to take over the role for them. So I'm glad that you did that, because I feel exactly the same. I put the most pressure on myself. My dad wanted me to succeed within the business. And one of the things I did was, instead of in the early days of sitting down with him and be like, oh, there's a problem here, what would you do? Or, hey, there's a problem here, this is ridiculous. I just went with the team and solved the problem. So me becoming undeniable was, I moved myself through the business into the right roles, into the basically the general manager role, by solving problems with the team, going back to the leader of the company, the CEO, which was my father at the time. And instead of being like, hey, we got this problem, this is an issue, it's, hey, we had a problem, this is the way we solved it, this is the outcome, this is the way the team made the decision together, I'm just keeping you updated on what's going on. All of a sudden, that led down this path of him being like, oh my God, this guy's getting shit done, I don't need to help him as much anymore. So yeah. A lot of people, when they're moving themselves, and I see it probably more in a family business environment, because they like need this level of approval, or to your point, you have a different level of relationship with the owner. You can go in and do things a little differently. But for me, the most important thing anybody can do as they're trying to move themselves up a leadership rank is show how you can solve problems. Don't just ask for the role, show and earn what it takes to become the person that has that role. Even if it's within a small team and you're trying to take over a much bigger team, if you run your team like an absolute aces, like the best, people are going to see that.
Yeah.
And that's, how so it's going to grow. And that's how you're going to move up forward. So I love that you put pressure on yourself. I do the same thing.
Yeah. And by the way, you're never going to please 100% of the people, right? So there's still going to be doubters. There's still going to be haters. There's still people on the outside that assume my dad sold it to me just because it was his choice, when it was actually the Fortune 100 company's choice. Right. Not that he wouldn't have, because again, I made myself undeniable, but you're never going to please everyone. And I'm sure there was people in the firm that thought I shouldn't have been the choice, right? You know, so none of them came out and said it to me. However, like you got to be aware of that, and you're not going to please everyone. So it's really good. Oh, and something else you brought up that's actually really good to teach young leaders is, one of the things my dad did with me over the last couple of years in the transition was, there was a problem or an issue, and he'd present it to me and he would say, how would you solve that? And he had the answer. He just wanted to make sure I was thinking about it appropriately. And if I had any different take on it, he may consider it, but he typically already had the answer, and he was making sure that I was working through it mentally and considering all options and all feelings involved and all people involved, to make sure that I was thinking about it as a true CEO. Yes. and a mature leader. So if you're trying to grow leaders in your organization, that was one of the best things my father did for me, was not give me the answer, but rather present the problem, have me work through it with him, and then give me feedback positively or negatively.
Yes. I love that. And if you're in leaders, growing leaders, encourage them not to worry about how you would solve it. Encourage them to think about how they would solve it. So long as the outcome gets there and it's either the same or lower cost or whatever the factors are that make the decision right, there's more than one way to skin a cat. That saying's been around for a long time. Yeah. It doesn't have to be the exact same path. It just has to end at the same destination. And that's the thing with your growing a leader. Encourage them to think on their own, because the more they think on their own, the more they exercise that muscle of discipline to think. And it's just going to become a much easier for thing to do over time. Truth.
Very, very good. All right, let's get a little deeper here. Starting with your acquisition experience. So there's got to be a succession and buyout and all that different stuff that happens in any transition of the business. So for going to new president and CEO, you're now the new president and CEO, then touching on your leadership journey after you got the seat. Let's talk a little bit there about the transition, succession. Now you're the guy running the firm. What was that like?
I'm one of those people that acts first, finds the emotions later. And there's a lot of people in the world that have the emotions first and act later. So for me, taking over the seat, taking over the role, I remember specifically when I was in the GM role, so stepped down underneath my dad's role. Eventually, I knew I was going to take the business over, and eventually I knew I was going to need to lean on him for help and all that stuff. And I was like, man, there's one day he's not going to be around anymore. Hopefully it's as long and far out as possible as we can make it. But when that day comes, what am I going to do? Right? I'm going to need his help. So COVID was the biggest transfer of this whole thing that forced the situation, right? Everybody basically left an office if they were older or didn't need to be in the office space. For me, COVID life didn't change. I went to the office every day. I had my shop guys doing all the work they needed to, and everybody else in the building basically went home and worked from home. So because my dad wasn't there as much, me and him communicated a lot throughout the day, but I started having to make way more decisions as a president and CEO kind of role than one would normally expect someone to do. But if you're a GM, you're like the second in command. So you're used to making decisions, you're used to helping. So once I finally took the role over, and there was always a 2019, 2020 kind of transfer of leadership role and transfer of the seat, so to speak, between him and I. So COVID, interestingly enough, just forced it into play. It's only been kind of in the last 6 months to 8 months that I've truly recognized the seat that I'm in. And I'm truly recognizing the true power of the seat in terms of helping the future, helping the team that I have, helping my industry do the things that they're doing. The few years prior to that, man, I was just head down grinding. I was literally just head down grinding. Yeah, okay, I'm in a different seat, comes with different decisions. You got to do more sales work and marketing work, but I was just head down grinding. I never took enough time to step back and hold the emotional side of the reflection of what I was actually doing. I was just in the process. I was getting shit done. I was helping the team do things and find ways to do them better and grow the team with some acquisitions of some people to fill some of the roles that make us the team that we are and really fill that seat. So I don't know if I specifically answered your question the way it was that you wanted me to work that through. But for me, it's, I look at it as action and emotion. And there's two differences of people in the world. And it's no problem being one or the other. But I've always been, let's go get shit done. And then I'll step back and find the time to reflect on, oh my God, this is amazing. This is so cool, the seat that I'm in. And I'm so honored to be able to sit in a seat like this. And COVID actually was probably the biggest part of that. I'm so glad I was able to be a leader of a company during that time to help as a team make a decision around what we do versus somebody telling me what I had to do.
Yeah, no, that's really good. And I think you did answer to, like, God always has his hand in things. And you answered to the point, which brings me to be able to speak to that other person. Mm-hmm. So if you're an emotional leader, you got to realize that calm is a superpower. And you are the lighthouse for each and every one of your employees. So if you're an emotional leader, you have to get control of your emotions. It's a necessity. And in fact, even if you deal with emotions well, like Stefan does, or like I do, you're still a human being. So you still have emotions.
Yeah.
And so one of the tricks or tools that I used was blocking time for processing or learning or thinking deeply. Okay. So I would do that on Fridays, and I'd usually set aside an hour. And most of the time I'd keep to that hour, sometimes a little bit longer, sometimes a little bit shorter. But really what I do, let's say, I'll give you a real world example. Let's say at 9 a.m. I got to terminate someone. That comes with emotion. Okay. Yeah. Maybe someone that you've had for a long time, that you care about them, their family, their well-being. Like, that's an emotional experience. I don't care who you are. And then at 10 a.m. you got to mentor or have a board meeting, or you got to mentor one of your key leaders or whatever it may be. They deserve your best. And so you got to set aside your emotions from the 9 o'clock, but you still have to deal with them. So having a spot on your calendar or a time that you can deal with them is very productive, because you know that you're not just burying it and then you're going to lash out on someone later because it just comes out of nowhere, which, by the way, will happen if you don't deal with them. But now you have a time on your calendar to go, okay, I can't deal with this now. Here's when I will deal with it, and move it to that time block. So your answer was really good in that regard, because you and I actually handle emotion well, whereas someone else may not, but you still got to deal with those emotions as they come up. So
yeah, my sister and I joke about this a bunch of times, where whenever there's something going on with the family or there's like an emotional issue, my dad had some health issues a couple of years ago, she stopped and was very emotional about it. And then eventually she would get herself into an action state. Where me, it was like, oh, I got to go solve this problem. I got to go help him here. I got to go help him here. And it was only like a month later that I was like, whoa, like this, that was pretty big. That was an emotional situation. And I love the point of giving yourself the time to get that emotional, can't find the word I want to say for it, but that emotional moment or that emotional time that you have to invest in to get that off your chest, to get it off your plate, just like a to-do list of stuff. I love that. I'm actually going to start doing that for myself. I do it in ways, but I don't schedule it. And I love the fact that you schedule it. I'm going to start doing that.
Well, and sometimes it doesn't have to be an emotional thing. Sometimes it could be like you have this idea or this thought that deserves more attention and you don't have time for it today, but you set aside time in that, you know, on Friday or whatever you want to block it as, and you have time for it there. So you just keep it on the notes section of your phone, like to deal with later or to deal with on Friday, I don't know, your special time, your reflection time, whatever you want to get, my me time, yeah. I deal with it then, right? So you can capture the thought, capture the emotion. Here's when I deal with it. So it's just a really good hack, I think, for most people. All right. So going back to this acquisition piece. So based on your personal experience with taking over the family business, what is the number one tip you'd have for others that are just beginning the acquisition process? Or maybe better put, what is one thing you wish you would have known going into that chapter?
I think my situation was a little unique in that I was so involved and so kind of working hand in hand with my dad that I got a really good understanding of what it took to be in a seat, and being forced into it during that period of time during COVID and so forth. I had no choice. I had to act, right? Mm. If I were to look back or be in a person in a different situation without the way the world was at that time, I would say one of the most important things that's usually when someone gets into running a business, some people come in and they think they have it their way and that's the way they want to have it. Right. And then there's other people, if they take like the Toyota approach, they just don't do anything for 6 months. They figure out how it works. And then they go try to fix whatever the problems and the solutions are. I have this like hybrid mode where I have a vision for what I want to do, but I don't want it to be my vision. Right. I need it to be the vision of everybody else. So I think one of the strongest things that's helped me in the transition was in 2018, 2019, like yourself, you know, we joined a phenomenal leadership and entrepreneurial group called Arte. And that really helped me mentally work through some of the changes and differences that I worked through in the organization. But I would say if I were to give advice to somebody in that field, I would say two words, humble and grace. One, be humble, right? You don't need to be the person that makes all the decisions when you're in the top seat. You just need to make sure that the company is hitting the goals and working towards the vision it is. And ultimately, you're much better off making your team feel like they made the decision and giving the team the credit, because that's what gives them the buy-in to the organization and the desire to stay within it because they feel like they're making a difference. I personally don't care if it's my decision, but so long as we're moving towards the mission, that's been a huge thing for me. Huge. And that's really, it's developed a lot over the last few years, but early on, I kind of really recognized the value of what that is. Honest to God, I don't care if I make the decision or not. I said this now twice, but I just really mean it. It doesn't need to be me that makes the decision. I'd rather, and this goes back to something that's been like a part of me for my whole life, is I care a lot about people, and I care a lot about seeing people smile, seeing people win, seeing people take that step in their life. So for me, I'm always looking to try to make someone else try to make the decision or help someone else try to make a decision, because that really what lifts you up. And then the other side is grace. So when you come into a new organization, if you're coming in completely fresh and new, or if you're just, you know, growing up in an organization and now you're responsible for different people that maybe you haven't had the same level of engagement with, I would say give each other a little bit of grace to learn each other. Right. Mm. It's like starting a new relationship. You don't know exactly what that person's like. And, you know, you're dating somebody and after a month, they kind of show a little bit more of their personal life, how they act, or maybe they're messy. Maybe they're super clean. Give each other a little bit of grace. We're all individuals. And eventually, like the frequency of life, like those things, they might butt heads a little bit. Eventually, they're going to get into a really good rhythm. And if you give each other the grace to figure that out, it's amazing the power of what that can do for you as an organization, as people.
Oh, agreed. This is a little bit off topic, but you mentioned it a few times. How often are you communicating your vision with your team?
Once a week, every day, depends on what I'm doing and where the topic is. I'm always trying to give people the idea of where it's going and what we're doing, But I have a vision on two sides. One is this is what we're trying to do as a company, but as a manufacturing company, you know, you have tasks that are sometimes a little bit more robotic, right? It's not the glory of marketing and putting all these things together or, you know, dealing with large financial assets. While that can be robotic in and of itself, the thing that I do, and this is a great lesson for anybody who's responsible for people. If you're doing something that's changing people's lives, and you as the company owner know this, or you as the leader know this, you got to make sure that knowledge goes down the line to all the people that work for you. So I spend a lot of time in my shop floor with guys that are punching holes in sheet metal or welding material together or picking parts off a shelf to go put into a box for somebody to go use. I don't just tell them, hey, you're doing a great job. This looks beautiful. I actually remind them that the reason that we need to do such good quality work is our equipment is used in every area of the world. It's used to help people make knees and hips for hip replacements and knee replacements. It's used for a pair of Ray-Ban sunglasses. It's used for the dental brackets you wear in your teeth. It's in everything, right? It's in every single industry. So when I'm sitting with somebody, and specifically if it's for one of these medical companies, I go up and remind them, hey, I just want to let you know how proud I am of the work you're doing and the quality of the work that you're doing. And I just want to remind you why it's so important to do this the same way every time. Because this piece of equipment is going to go be used for this company, and this company goes makes a product like this, for example, a hip, right? And if that product fails due to a failure of us not doing our job right, it might mean a product has a failure in it. And hopefully the company catches it. But if they don't, it could mean something really bad for the person at the end of the day who's using that hip to walk around every single day. And you know what? It might be you one day down the road. So I bring this connection back to the art of welding, to the actual use of the product at the end of the day. And that gives people this mindset when they come to work. They're not just coming into work to weld metal together. They're coming into work to weld metal together so some guy's hip down the road is actually functional and good.
Yeah.
And if you find that connection and that way to give people the real world understanding of what their daily task is for the world, that's another vision that I think all leaders should work on creating outside of what the company's trying to do collectively.
Yeah, so good. So good. You're explaining the why. You're giving them the why every time and reminding them. And so even if you have to course correct them or challenge them or just correct them in general where they are making a mistake, it's reminding them, hey, this is why we're doing what we're doing. Because it really matters. And almost every business can tell that story in a different way. Just oftentimes we're not reminding our people enough. So that's so good. All right. I want to go back to the succession thing real quick. Fast forward, you're now, how many years are into your role as president and CEO? Is it three?
Four and a half.
Four and a half now. Okay. All right. You recently made a huge shift. Tell us about your monumental move last summer. I know all about this, but I want the world to know about this because this is fascinating because most businesses, and when I say most, 99.9% businesses would never do this. Tell us about the move last summer and why you did it.
Yeah, great question. Still working through the emotional side to it. I haven't given myself that time to sit back and reflect, but I do, you know, periodically throughout the year here. But we're a 55-year-old organization this year. My dad started it that long ago, built a great company, great legacy. We've been in New Jersey for 54 years of that business's operation. And we got to a point that from 2019 to 2022, the company's pretty much doubled in its output, doubled in its earnings and revenue and so forth. And the team got only slightly larger. So we figured out a way to really get and remain lean and grow with what we're doing. But we got to a point where we had no more space. People were crawling on top of each other to try to work on equipment. So we said, all right, we need more space. So over the last few years, we've been looking at where do we go? What do we do? And it led us to relocating our business from New Jersey down to North Carolina in the Charlotte area. And that started August 1st. It finished, the last person just acquired their apartment, I'd say about 2 weeks ago. And we've got two furnaces that have left our building already. We've got six more that are on our production floor. It was a big move. Now, this took nine trucks to move a whole bunch of manufacturing equipment and inventory and stock. It took a lot of effort to move 21 people down, maintain seven people within the state up in New Jersey. And then the remaining people on the team either left to go find new work or they are actually at a point where they could retire in their life. This was massive. It was to move a manufacturing facility is not a simple task, especially when you go into a shell building where you have to put all new power, all new water, all new gases, all new utilities across the whole board. But there's a lot of freedom in that. And there's a lot of fun in that. And there's a lot of fun in the ability to kind of build that vision towards what growth could mean, build the facility the way you want to have it laid out. And oh my God, not only do we have more, you know, 2.5 times the space width and length, we also have 2 times the height of the building. So there's so much greatness around where we are. And every day I come here, just like this big flag that's behind me, the shop has a gigantic flag within it too. And every day I walk out there, there's just something new and special that I see and I feel, and I get this emotion tied to this place. And an interesting story is the shop in our facility, we have this flag. It's a gigantic American flag. It's a 15 foot by 25 foot wide flag. And the reason I chose that was for two things. One, it's what fit proportionally within the building. But the other reason is our old building was 15 feet tall. This building's 32 feet tall. So every day we go out there and remind people that that flag, the height of that flag is where we came from. The height of that flag is where all the stuff is that we have in this building, where it all sat into. So I remind people of where we came from, and I remind people of how great it is that we have all this space and we have all this freedom to go do what we want to do within this new facility. So it was monumental. It was phased in multiple shifts. I got to tell you one thing is I can't be more proud of my team for putting the time and energy into what it took to do this. It's a lot to move manufacturing. It's a lot to move a facility that builds equipment with a lot of equipment.
It's a lot to move across the street.
Yeah.
Like, it's a lot to, you move states away. So I think a lot of people are questioning, like, you know, was it a money thing? Was it a freedom thing? All that different stuff. And then on the other hand, people are going, how the hell did you convince your entire, you know, team, and not your entire team, but the majority of your team, to move everything they've known from Jersey their whole lives, a lot of them, your whole life in Jersey, to North Carolina?
Yeah, great question. It came down to a few things. The first thing was we needed space, right? So what led to kind of looking outside the state, outside of the financial side to it. So while I love New Jersey, I've lived there my whole life. Unless you're working in the pharmaceutical industry or directly supporting them, they don't look at support for manufacturing as well as some of the other states across the country do. So while we had some customers in the pharmaceutical world, we don't have them across. That's not our only business. We support the whole industry gamut across the whole thing. So I knew that staying within that state, it would have been really difficult to grow, do things. I mean, it takes 6 to 10 months to accomplish something permit wise. We're down here in Charlotte. We can get it done in a month or 2 weeks. So speed to make decisions and speed to be flexible within an organization was one of the factors. Monetarily was the other side to it. So in looking for buildings, we recognized, okay, we're going to have to move at least 45 minutes to get to where the better, bigger buildings are within the state of New Jersey. We were Northeast. The central area of New Jersey was the best place to go. So in that realm, I said, oh my God, people might move 45 minutes. Well, if the business is going to move 45 minutes, people are going to have to think about moving. So then I just started cruising up and down the entire coast and looked everywhere from Maine all the way down to Florida. And there was places that are lower cost than Charlotte for certainty. But Charlotte in North Carolina, if you look back over the last couple of years, has been rated number one for business in the country for states.
And just blowing up, growing.
Yeah, and it's continuously growing. And it's one of the hottest places to relocate to. If you look over the last 5 years, there's over 250,000 people that have moved here. That's huge. Mm-hmm. Right? So the other side for a business, I'm thinking 20, 30 years down the road for my business growth, New Jersey is one of the largest, it keeps competing with California, but it's been number one more often, is the highest exodus state in the country. Meaning it's the most amount of people that are leaving that state compared to any other state. And North Carolina has been in the top three. So that was a very attractive thing for me too. As the growth of the business, people are going to retire. Not everybody's coming with me. I need a good place where there's going to be labor. I'm going to need to be somewhere where people need to want to join a team. So that was another big factor to it. Rent was half the cost. Electricity's half the cost. Process of getting things done is half the cost. Cost of living for everybody that moved down here is between 20, 25% less. So there was tons of factors that made sense for this place to be. And the other benefit is this place just feels like Northern New Jersey. There's so many suburbs around and trees. It might not be as hilly, but there's still a lot of things that are very resemblant of where we came from. So that was another factor for me to say, hey, why don't you guys go down and check this place out? Let me know if you like it. So that was a huge part to it.
Hey,
the
before
other
you
side
move
to what
on,
you'd
I
ask
want
for.
to, yeah, before you move to that next point, I want everyone to key in on all the factors that you just laid out there, because this, some people think, oh, I just, you know, the business owner just wanted to move to Charlotte because of that's what they wanted to do. No. He looked up and down the coast, took in factors like, he didn't mention this out loud, but there's bureaucracy of Jersey. How much fast, like you said, how long it takes, but let's call out politicians and bureaucracy for a minute. That's a big part of it. Like, if you want to be business friendly, there can't be as much red tape as these bureaucrats try and put in there. And that's heavy in New Jersey. That's heavy in New York. That's heavy in California. And that's why you're seeing businesses and people leave. Obviously, taxes. Taxes are high in Jersey. Taxes are high in New York. Taxes are high in California. That's why you're seeing people leave. It's a little more friendly, or a lot more friendly there. It's also about the costs, not just on rent, but on electricity, on all the different things that are going to go into the business. And that's not just so the business owner can make more, it's so that everyone can make more. Because at the end of the day, if the business succeeds, everyone succeeds at a higher level. And then labor, finding good people or great people for your organization. You got to be in a spot where that's easier to do than it is harder to do. Right. So all those different factors led him to make a decision, not just on a whim, not just willy nilly, or not just because he loved Charlotte, North Carolina, and wanted his team to move there and had to convince them of such. There's a ton of shit that went into this. And after you get to that point, then it's the mechanics of moving everything down there, which in manufacturing is far harder than me moving a financial firm across the street. So I just want everyone to hear all that one more time, because it's a lot. So go ahead to the next part of the question on how you got everyone to buy in.
Yeah, it's a great summary. It's not like you're moving a bunch of desks with telephones and computers, right? It's way harder than that. You know, you bring up a really good point. This is not my first choice of places to relocate to. I'm a cold weather guy. I love the winter. I love to go run towards snow. If I were to relocate the business to where I wanted to go, it would have been like Montana or Wyoming. But there's no labor over there, right? I'm not going to bring enough people. After telling everybody on the team, I had about three people that said, I would have gone. I was like, that's still not enough. We have 40 people on our team. So the thing about my exploration through this process that you hit so well was every place I went to go look at, I looked at for my team. I didn't look at it for me. Yes, of course, I needed to like the place a little bit too. But I looked at it for where would my team want to go, and where would my team want to go to a place that gives them an opportunity to change their personal lives financially, maybe buy a house finally, maybe get a nicer apartment, but pay the same amount of rent, be around an area. You know, a lot of people don't like the snow, so being in an area where it doesn't really snow so much helps them too. But everything I did was for my team. Every location I picked was for my team. I wanted my team to be proud of the building that we came to. And we are, without a doubt, hands down, in the nicest industrial park in the Southern Charlotte area. I've seen 20 different industrial parks. This place is different. It's beautiful. It is everything that holds the line of quality and excellence that are the two of our five core values as an organization. Quality and excellence is what we have here. And when I walk around this place, that is another reason why I say this place is so damn special. So, how did we convince the team to do it? I poured my heart into it, man. I spent a lot of time researching, gathering data, gathering information. The day that I made the presentation to the team about this is what our future has an opportunity to do, but I'm not making this decision myself, like I said earlier in the call here, right? I put a whole presentation together. I moved equipment out of the way because we didn't have a big training room or a big enough room. So I moved equipment out of the way and I put all these chairs down. I took the projection screen from our conference room with the projector and set it all up in the back. And I didn't sleep the night before because kind of like I'm doing right now, I'm getting a little emotional about it. But I was very tied into trying to find a way to get the team to want to do this, right? For their sake, not for mine. So I laid out the options. I said, we can stay here, get a second building. We can go find a second or a bigger building within the state, or we can go relocate to a new place that's going to provide better lives, provide better costs, allow us to invest in some really cool new equipment. Where if I stay here in New Jersey, I can't really do that. because we didn't have it, the change of going to a place that's manufacturing friendly led you or led us to innovate. It led us to find all these new ways to bring more manufacturing back into our building versus having to rely on all these outsourced resources that we worked with, which I don't shy away from. I like working with companies outside, you know, our organization, but I presented to the team and I thought people were going to yell and scream at me, but there was about three people that came up to me right after that meeting was done. And they're like, can we go tomorrow? I was like, oh, thank God. Right. And they were the first ones that came up. So they gave me, you know, gave me some good feel. A couple of the other people were like, you know, this isn't what we want to do. I can't believe you're doing this to me. Like nobody ever said, I can't believe you're doing this to me. It was like, this isn't in line with what we need to do as a family. I got a lot of people around New Jersey. And I said, okay, completely understand. If you want to change, I tried to convince some of these people to go because I like them. I said, why don't you be a trendsetter? A lot of people are relocating away from this area because your future obviously wants to have more money in it, right? You want to retire. You want to have more money in your pocket. Why don't we start now? And for the next 10, 15 years, you might put an extra $5,000, $10,000, $20,000 in your pocket from all these costs of living savings and so forth. So I got one of the teammates to think that way, but the other ones were very tied to family, which I love. I'm a big family guy, so I've nothing against it. But so the presentation was one step. The other step that we did is we basically said, all right, everybody that's interested in this, go fly down there. Flights on me, hotels on me, go spend the weekend down there and go check this place out. Because every time I was down here, after the third time, I'm like, all right, this place is just like home. It's a little warmer in the summertime for longer periods of time, but it's pretty much just like home. There's so much similar feeling. And oh my God, this place is full of people that actually say, hi, how are you? How's your day going? It's nice to see you. It's nice to meet you. That is one thing about the Southeast area that is really, really well known for its reputation across the world. So
like the Midwest.
Honestly, dude, the biggest reason I think that as much of my team, we retained three quarters of our team, a little bit more than half joined us down here. I think they decided to come because they believe in me.
Mm.
They believe in what I talk about. They believe in my heart. They believe in the fact that I got their back every single day. I got their back in everything they're doing, whether it's work, whether it's personal issues they're dealing with. I'm a big believer in asking people what's going on, how are you doing? There's plenty of times people come to work and they're not in the best of moods. They got an issue going on, whatever it is. Too many leaders in the world try to figure out what's wrong with that person in terms of why they're not performing. I try to figure out what's wrong with that person because they're a person. And I think that's why a lot of people came down here, left family members back in New Jersey to come join me and this team down here to do what we're doing.
Well, I would agree.
It's very, very, I guess I'm having my emotional moment. So,
well, let me help you gather yourself because you take a moment and I'll just kick it off. I would agree with you that they came because of you. Not just because of you, but that's a large portion of it. Like when employees choose to work in a place, they're choosing, yes, there's benefits, yes, there's income, but the reason they often stay is the leader. Oh, by the way, the reason they often leave is because of the leader.
True.
Especially in a closely held business, not a large corporation. And oftentimes I've been keying on with the people that I'm coaching lately on this as well, is if your vision, like Ed has taught us, if your vision's not big enough where they can fit theirs inside of, they'll go find a leader where their vision can fit inside. And so that's where us as a leader, we have to care about our people and we have to provide a vision that they can, so big that they can fit their visions inside for all the employees. I thought it was brilliant on one of our calls how someone asked about, you know, someone wanting to, those in sales wanting to make not just 10 grand a month, but 100 grand a month.
Mm-hmm.
And Andy basically just said back, well, it sounds like you need a bigger vision.
Yeah.
In so many words, there's a lot more context to that, as I know you remember, but it was a great response because this is a great employee that's obviously killing it on the sales side and wants a bigger vision to be able to understand how to make 100 a month.
Mm-hmm.
So go freaking figure it out so you don't lose that great salesperson.
Yeah. And support them in every way you can.
Yeah. All right. So speaking of your passions, this is a two-part question because I want you to tell us a little bit more about what's happened to manufacturing in America and then how you're building your company culture to reinforce your passion for made in American business practices. So start with what's happened to manufacturing in America so that people have a little bit better context.
Yeah, I've done enough research around manufacturing to know that it's not the sexiest thing, you know, that it used to be many, many years ago. If you go back over the last 60 years, we've probably lost around, 35 to 40% of the employment level that we used to have. Interestingly enough, and I didn't know this stat till about a week ago, most of the decline in the manufacturing in the United States happened underneath Republican presidents. Actually, all of the decline has happened underneath Republican presidents. Started in Reagan's time, because after the war, America pushed an innovation strategy that worked really, really well. But in the late 70s, when Reagan basically took over as president, his push was for services, not manufacturing. So manufacturing got pushed to the side. And interestingly, you know, during Bush's time, it also went down pretty drastic. During his son's time, Bush Jr. went down drastic. During Clinton's time, it went up. During Obama's time, it went up. During Trump's time, it fluctuated mainly because of COVID, but he had a push for it. But I didn't expect the stat to be that way. Now, I'm not trying to take sides one way or the other. I just found that to be really interesting. You know, we only account for about 8% of the workforce in the country. Manufacturing does. Now, interestingly, the average salary for that workforce is around 95 grand. So it's a pretty nice salary for people to get into. Certainly there's opportunity for more as you get involved in engineering and so forth. But outside of the redirection efforts, I'd say by some of the leaders we've had as presidents of our country, the other thing that really happened was in the 70s, Japan really came to the world as a manufacturing leader. And they came to the manufacturing world as a low-cost leader. So that led America to find ways to compete with things purely based on cost, right? And cost became everything. Cost became the driver. Cost became the entire conversation. And we lost what was quality, which is what we're known for as an American country. Mm-hmm. Anything you buy from America, it's usually not the thing that's going to fall apart first. So that was a big push. And then there's two other factors I think that played into it pretty big is one, and many people might not know this stat, but if you look from 1980 to about 2010, we had a consolidation of banks by almost two thirds. There was almost 20,000 banks in the world or in the United States around the 1980s. And we're at about, there was about 7,000 in 2010, and it's probably lower now. So that consolidation of all these small local banks that were supporting all these small local manufacturing facilities are now part of these huge conglomerates. It made financing and the ability to get money harder, which put people out of business. And then the final thing I think that really started to drive everything out of this country is the cell phone that, you know, more than half the country holds in their hand, and it's the Apple cell phone. The Apple model became something people strive to mimic versus realize what it was doing to our country and what it was doing to the ability for this country to stand on its own two feet of making things. So we've been a world and a country, or we've been a country that's been known for quality making, manufacturing many, many, many years ago. And now it's okay, we can innovate and think of some cool ideas, but we can't manufacture anymore. Let's go do it elsewhere, because all we're doing is appeasing shareholders. All we're doing is appeasing the guys that want more money in their pocket. And there's no pride in manufacturing anymore within this country. There is still some, but it's down tremendously from what it used to be. So I think that's what led to a huge downfall within our country from a manufacturing point of view.
It's a really interesting history. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah, and we're starting to see the pendulum swing back a little bit, it seems. But talk about why it's so important for you and your passion around the Made in American business practices.
Yeah. So, and we absolutely are. COVID was something I think opened people's eyes, surprisingly, to the challenges of outsourcing things outside the country. And a lot of that had to do with the struggles and challenges of supply chain, right? How many boats did we have sitting off the coast of California and New Jersey that were being offloaded, right?
Seemed to be thousands. I don't know the number, but
It was a heavy amount. I don't actually have the specific amount, but it was in the thousands if you take into the total amount over time period, right? And there was an interesting time where everybody basically said, why can't we offload these boats? We don't have people. They're on strike. They're being laid off. They're this, that, and the other. In my mind, I'm thinking, we have all these people that just got pulled out of all this, all the, you know, Middle Eastern wars. Why don't we deploy these people to go offload these boats? That to me would have been a great strategy. Right? You're telling me the guys that can build bridges and put things together and save the country and you know, tackle some of the biggest challenges that we face on some of the hardest surfaces and geographical areas of the world can't go offload some boats? To me, that would have been a good idea, but I'm not a leader in the political side of the world, so it wasn't a decision for me to make, although I tried to speak as loud as I could about that. So what that's done is it's made people recognize the challenges of supply chain and what's come from that. And what's actually, if you look at the Chinese economy right now, because or the manufacturing world or the industry, it is the biggest one in the world right now, but it's struggling right now because the cost associated with moving things, the cost of diesel, is driving the cost of moving things from their land to other lands substantially high. Where they used to say, I'll pay for the shipping, don't have to worry about it, I'll bring it to you. That's not happening as much anymore. That's a big factor into it. That's making people start to realize it's not as low cost as we used to have it. Also, what's happening over there is there's been revolutions of people wanting to earn more money because they feel like they finally deserve it. That's going to continue to get higher as much as you can too. So it's led people to think about, okay, we need to bring stuff back into our control because I can't deal with, you know, if I got to build a car and the one thing that actually helps the car move and push the power across all its circuits is the semiconductor, it's sitting on a boat, you know, 20 miles off the shoreline, I can't get it. That's a huge problem. So interestingly enough, there's been a lot of investment right now over the last few years in bringing manufacturing back. It's not all coming back to America though. It's coming back to North America, but not truly just America. So you are seeing a lot of investment in lower cost areas like Mexico, some in Canada, but not as much, but it's more down in Mexico when you're going down the supply chain or down the country, because you can drive those things into the country a lot easier than you can get it off a boat.
Yep.
So there is reshoring going on. It's not as great as we would like to see it. I would love to see a lot more of it. I know that Apple as a company has made an announcement recently where they're putting some energy into 3D printing their next line of Apple Watches, which is incredible. It's amazing. It helps my industry tremendously because a large organization is looking at using the technology I'm involved in. I would personally be so proud and excited if Apple said, you know what? We're gonna make this part in America.
Would you actually switch to an Apple phone then and appease me?
We don't know yet. We'll see. I'm still a Samsung guy. There's a lot more freedom in what we do. I think if you're a Windows person, Samsung works easy for me. If it's Apple, I got to change every piece of electronic product that I have around the house. So I can do it. But if they become more of an American Patriot company making things in the country, I will put a lot more weight to it.
All right, cool. Hey, real quick, I want to plug this. So Stefan makes some incredibly beautiful wooden American flags. I know you do a bunch of other stuff, but if anyone wants a beautiful statement piece for their home, their bar, their office, where can they get that from you?
Appreciate that, man. So I started a wood shop called SJ Wood Co. So if you look up sjwoodco.com, that's where you'll see that beautiful artwork being made. Appreciate that.
All right. No, absolutely. I mean, it's beautiful stuff. So I want to make sure everyone got the plug on that. And because I know that's a passion of yours, it's not the Elnick system, the main business, but it's something that's really cool and patriotic. And I know that we have a lot of listeners that would appreciate that. All right.
True. It's interesting. I'll add one thing to that. So the first one I made was actually a gift for my parents because they were going through getting their house redone. And I was like, I got to make them a statement piece. And I made the first one. I sat it down on my table and I looked at it and I said, holy crap, I don't want to give it to anybody because it's really, really nice, you know? And I was like, well, if I think it's that nice, maybe other people would think it's that nice. So this made me go down the path of starting a business in wood shop, which to me has always been a therapeutic hobby that now I'm providing the world when, and I have the free time to do it. But everything I do, the four businesses that I operate and run have everything to do with making something or supporting the making of something. So I'm a huge believer in, and I take a shit ton of pride in making something, because when you take raw metal, raw wood, whatever it is, and you build this beautiful thing out of it, you step back and you say, oh my God, look what I just created. Look what I just made. Right. And I'm not knocking the financial industry, the marketing industry, or anything along those lines, but those are just transactions. We're making things. We have control and resources, and we're actually helping, you know, show the world what can actually be done with your two hands.
Yeah. No, it's incredible to do it. So I don't, being as ADD as I am, it's hard for me to do it. But when I get locked in and I, you know, I was able to make these beautiful charcuterie boards for a group of friends of mine, Alicia and I were out in the wood shop with my buddy Carl, who has a lot of experience and has a beautiful wood shop, because we wouldn't have been able to do it without him. To see those come to, you know, from a raw piece of wood to something beautiful that you can hand someone is a special experience. I would encourage anyone, even if from the first wood thing I did was out in Carl's wood shop, and we did pens, these nice, beautiful pens. Mm-hmm. And because that was the first thing he was taught by his mentor in the woodworking industry, how to make and, you know, whittle pens that actually
my brother-in-law does
look
that.
Real cool. All right. So final question, always end with this one, but so I know you listen, so you probably have been thinking about this, but what's an unpopular belief that you hold to be true that you think others would either vehemently or just disagree with you?
You know, I have listened enough to the show that this question has posed a mental challenge for me, because I was trying to think of a good one. And I could have gone about 100 different ways with this, but one of the things that I'm extremely passionate about, and I think it might have come out during this podcast as we're sitting here talking, is the level of care you have. And I think that there's a disconnection for most people to understand the level of care you put into something dictates and determines the level of winning you're going to have in your life. Mm. And I have a famous phrase that I love. I talked about it in the last podcast I was with you, but those who care more win more. Whether it's your people, whether it's what you're making, whether it's the task you're doing, I don't even care if it's cleaning your kitchen, cleaning your bedroom, clean whatever, right? Any task you do, if you put that extra level of care into that, it's going to be that much better, whether it's the feeling you get from accomplishing it, or from it's the level of effort and care that you put into somebody else, they will see it and they will feel it. And not only will they win, but because they win, you win.
Yeah.
And I think that's a theory that a lot of people, they don't know the power of caring.
Or they don't take the time to appreciate it. That's a good one. I really like that one. I think that most people are caring people. Mm-hmm. I think they lack the awareness to create some intentionality around it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't understand how much it matters. It truly matters. And if they did, they would spend some more time making sure that they showed their care. And I'll be honest, like I struggle with it as well, because I don't need appreciation. I don't need affirmation. Like, that's not something I crave or need. I learned to live without it because I didn't get it growing up as much from my father, the person that I craved it from the most. So I have to be consciously aware and think more about that. Because it's just not of my world, because I don't need it. But what I have realized over time, my wife called me out, I was like, you have to show it. You can't just assume people know it.
Yeah. Give yourself a little grace though, man. I'll tell you, in watching some of your stories and so forth, and just following along with you in the world and your life, you've done a lot of this with your family lately. And I'm really proud that you've done it. Giving each one of your kids a day to themselves, giving time for your wife, recognizing the people that are in your world. Those are the moments. They don't feel like it at the time, but when you step back, like you said, and give yourself some time to reflect, those are those moments. So keep up doing what you're doing, man. You're doing a great job.
I appreciate that. And let's throw it back at you. What you did over the last year, I mean, really since you've taken over and built yourself into that, but what you did over the last year, the vast majority of people wouldn't even consider doing, nor would they be capable of doing. So to the tune that you, I mean, and to be able to lay it out for the audience like you did today, I think was going to be so immensely helpful for people to comprehend the work that it actually takes, the vision that needs to be created, and then also the work to be able to create, to communicate that vision. And it can be done through thought and care and making it about others and not yourself. Which is all something you brilliantly did. And I know you're still navigating the winds because it's so brand new, but you handled it brilliantly, and you should be very proud.
I appreciate that, man. It came with a lot of care and a lot of hard work. I asked a lot of questions. You know, I put a lot of homework into other people that have moved to organizations. I leaned on about five different people, two from my industry itself. What'd you do? How'd you do it? What'd you do right? What would you have done different? That was immensely helpful for me. There was one particular individual I think that gave me the most support. He let me come on site and not just talk to him, but he let me talk to about five different teammates that were part of his team that were helping part of this move and then added to the team. It was huge. So doing your homework is phenomenal. With that in mind, one of the things that I'm working on, and I've been trying to journal as much as I can about the process, about the emotions I went through, about the challenges that it went through, the discussions with people and kind of navigating those waters. I don't know whether this is going to be a book that comes for me down the road. I was just going to say,
this is a book, brother. That is
the
a book right there.
The challenges and pitfalls of moving an organization and, you know, uprooting your life, or at an absolute minimum, one of the things that, you know, I want the world to know, and, you know, especially for your audience, if this kind of conversation is going on in your head, be smart enough or be strong enough to ask questions. And I want to make sure that everybody knows that I want to be a resource to anybody in a similar situation. So if anybody needs help, if anybody's got a question, if anybody wants to, hey, what would you have done in this situation? What would I have done different? I want to be that resource. So feel free to get in touch with me, get a hold of me. My first name is Stefan, Stefan. Last name is Jones. Very different than it sounds. Looks like Jones, but flip the E in the N. Reach out on LinkedIn, reach out on Instagram, on Facebook. Anywhere I can help, I would love to. That would make me, it would just give me the ability to really appreciate the effort I put into what I'm doing.
Hey, if someone like this throws that out and you're thinking about it, make sure that you do it. Make sure you take them up on it. And certainly follow Stefan. Spartans, you know what to do. Share this far and wide. This has been a tremendous conversation. Thanks for taking the time, brother. This has been immensely helpful. So thanks for coming back on. Spartans, remember, good and great are the enemies of possible. Lead like a Spartan today.